Welcome in, everybody, to the divisional round betting preview. I'm here with Judah, as always, and we roped in Seth Galina to do this episode with us. Got some playoff games. He's prepped already for most of them through the broadcast work, so figured we could give you guys his musings on these four games. How you doing, Seth?
I'm good. I'm ready to get your listeners back in the hole. I'm not taking anyone out of any debt hole this week. I'm putting you guys back in the debt hole with my takes.
Oh, after wildcard weekend, I'm already there, buddy. So you can't put me back in. There was some surprising outcomes for me, at least, in wildcard weekend. And honestly, the games weren't all that close, weren't all that exciting, with the exception of the Commanders-Bucks game on Sunday night. A lot of kind of blowouts. There were some teams who I thought were in good spots, like the Chargers, like the Vikings, who didn't show up at all. So hopefully for my bankroll, we can have a little bit better week here in the divisional round. How was your wild card weekend, Judah?
Pretty solid. Rams really saved me, and like Rams alts, but definitely a weird week of football, at least in terms of how many blowouts there were. But I got a feeling this one. This divisional round is going to be a bit better and a bit more compelling games and some betting angles to attack as well.
Yeah, hopefully it's like the college football playoffs where you kind of get rid of the fluff in the first round, and then we get some high-quality matchups here. And we'll start with one of the more lopsided matchups of the week, the Texans, who are coming off a dominant game against the Chargers where their defense really carried them. The offense wasn't able to get much going early. It kind of turned around on that botched play that Stroud found Xavier Hutchinson towards the end of the first half. But they're going into Kansas City as 8.5-point underdogs. 41.5-point total in that game, lowest of the week. And Judah, I'm kind of interested what you think. Is there a reason to believe it's going to go differently than when we saw these two teams play a couple weeks ago on Christmas in a game that the Chiefs won pretty comfortably behind a big game from Mahomes in the passing offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think things favored the Chiefs in this spot. First off, like, Tank Dell's no longer playing for the Texans. That matters a lot. And I also think the Chiefs' rest and general health gives them a massive advantage relative to when these two teams last met a couple weeks ago. Number one, I'll start here. I think Jalen Austin is going to go. And he was a guy who was 95th percentile in our separation prevented. Nassee Johnson, who's been doing a lot to replace him, is like 35th percentile, or at least if you think of coverage in this week length system, giving him snaps, Nassee Johnson, and then replacing it with Jalen Watson. I think this defense might look a bit closer to how they looked the first half of this year, which was a lot better than the second half, as well as in 2023 when they were one of the best defenses in the NFL. And then you also just think about, like, Patrick Mahomes has been dealing with injuries, giving him basically 3.5 weeks to rest up, get him more mobile. It's going to matter more to the Chiefs than any other team. And, like, some of their key contributors are older veterans. That giving them a couple weeks of rest in the midst of a four-month season is huge. Like Travis Kelce getting a couple weeks off, that's going to be massive. DeAndre Hopkins getting a bunch of weeks off. You're returning. I mean, Marquise Brown's played in the last few weeks, but having him back and in the full swing of things, this is probably the best the Chiefs have looked all season. And I think when you combine that, we're probably going to see a different sort of Mahomes. I mean, even the betting markets have caught up to this. Patrick Mahomes' rushing prop is way higher than it's been in any other game this season. Right? There's some elements of, like, Mahomes stepping it up, in addition to the fact that the roster is probably the most rounded it's been all season. And it's hard, I think, to make any other case. But this is a Chiefs team that's ready to rock and roll. And, like, you can say all you want about how they ended up in the number one seed at 15-2 and there was certainly some luck to get there, but it's a completely different ballgame now. And I think this projects as the strongest the Chiefs have been all season.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm kind of with you. The counter argument is Houston's defense looked awesome against the Chargers, and that was an offense that was rolling going into the playoffs. obviously there's more reason. The Chargers offense is a little bit more fragile than the Chiefs, even given the concerns we've had about the Chiefs offense at times this year. But their receiving core is starting to round out with the trade for DeAndre Hopkins midseason. You get Marquise Brown back. Now they're in a much better spot than they were for much of the year. So I guess my question for you, Seth, is how do the Texans replicate what they were able to do against the Chargers? They were able to get a ton of pressure on Herbert. Obviously, their cornerback group is strength for this defense with Stingley, first-team All-Pro. Kamari Laster, who's playing really well as a rookie. So it kind of make the case for how the Texans defense is able to at least slow down the Chiefs enough to keep them in this game. And then tell me whether you actually believe that case.
I think it starts with first and 10, because something we've talked about, the people who I've talked to over this year, we've talked about how the Chiefs have been so good on third down. And one of the reasons they've been good on third down is because they've had shorter, you know, average yards to go on third down basically this whole season. Their third down numbers are absolutely insane. At some point in the season, it was like a 52% conversion rate. It's absolutely insane on third down. But if you can stop them early on first and 10, and what's happened later in the season, and it's weird because it kind of coincides with Isaiah Pacheco coming back, is that the run game hasn't been as good. And early in the season, they were a super efficient kind of down-to-down run offense, except they weren't super explosive. And I kind of wondered, like, usually you don't see that. Usually they go hand in hand, especially in a run game. But I kind of wondered, like, okay, are these 5-yard runs going to become 9-yard runs and 12-yard runs when Pacheco comes back and when Kareem Hunt gets kind of his feet more wet in this offense? Well, what's happened is the 5-yard runs have become like 3-yard runs. They haven't been running the ball at all very well. Now, they've been passing it pretty well, but they haven't been running the ball very well. The Texans generally have been a good run defense, hasn't been as great as the season gone on, but generally they've been a good run defense. If you can stop them early, because the Chiefs are going to still try and rely on running the football, maybe you have a chance on later downs. Now, like Judah said, if Mahomes is healthy, if he's running around, then it probably doesn't matter, because that's playoff Mahomes running around, escaping and making plays is the neutralizer. But I would say, and I do kind of believe that, like, that there's a chance that if you can get these negative runs on first and 10, stuff that really hasn't been happening for the Chiefs this whole season and is happening now, maybe there's a chance.
Yeah, I was on the Texans going into that Christmas game because it was right after Mahomes had the ankle sprain. Well, it was categorized as a mild high ankle sprain. I thought his mobility would be hurt, and I thought that was important because so much of the Chiefs' offense is built around his ability to create. But in that game, we saw he got the ball out really quick, 2.48 second average time to throw. That was his third fastest of the season. And he really just killed them on these underneath throws. He was 21 of 24 on throws 5 yards or less downfield for 171 yards. And we've really seen that the last two times we've seen the Chiefs' starting offense. Against the Steelers was his fastest time to throw of the season, where they're basically saying, okay, you have a really good pass rush, we're just going to take that away by getting the ball out quick and kind of neutralize that. And they've been effective doing that. The other part of the Houston defense that you don't really want to attack is those outside corners I mentioned. They've allowed the third lowest yards per target on throws outside the numbers this year, 12th highest on throws between the numbers. Obviously, the Chiefs passing game wants to attack the middle of the field. So I think it kind of sets up that they should be able to have similar success with these quicker passes over the middle of the field to what we saw in Week 16. But moving over to the other side, the Texans were able to have some success in this game offensively, even though they were playing from behind in the passing game specifically. A lot of that was Tank Dell, like you kind of called out, Judah. He had over 90 yards and a touchdown before he went down with that injury. And my concern on that side is Chiefs typically don't shadow as much with Trent McDuffie as they were with L'Jarius Sneed, but he still lined up across from Collins on 23 of his 39 routes in that game. So if they're basically saying, McDuffie, you're going to play across from Collins as much as you can, we're going to play man coverage, which we see from the Chiefs, especially in the playoffs, they tend to play tighter man coverage. And McDuffie and Collins, basically a wash. Right? Collins will might win some, but McDuffie's one of the best corners in the league. So then it's like, who else is going to beat us? John Mechie is basically their second receiver at this point. They just released Deontay Johnson because he was pouting in the locker room after a win last week by per reports. So it's like Dalton Schultz, like some of these other guys, you're not that worried about them. So the Chiefs kind of play physical, stop the run, which they've done a much better job doing this year, and try to make John Mechie, Xavier Hutchinson, Robert Woods, Dalton Schultz beat them. That's going to be a tough way for the Texans to win. You kind of see it the same way, Judah?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I think Nico Collins can win that matchup against Trey McDuffie. I would tend to side with a receiver of Collins' caliber, especially his numbers against man coverage are insane over the last couple of years. But I think you're exactly right. And the chances, and the reason why I highlighted Jalen Watson to start, the chances of a guy like John Mechie winning now decrease significantly because, like, the Chiefs now have that matchup advantage in man coverage. And you're relying on guys like Cade Stover or Xavier Hutchinson, who have not really been able to kind of replace the production that the Texans lost in Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell. And, like, you're really fighting an uphill battle, not to mention the Chiefs have been an unbelievable run defense all season, which is certainly a change from previous Chiefs teams. And, like, you're really relying on C.J. Stroud to bail you out on so many of these third and longs. And that's not a recipe for success. And certainly not, I think, given the state of the Chiefs' defense. Look, is it always a possibility of a guy in the NFL throwing deep 15% of the time, connecting on a bunch of deep balls and ending up in a kind of funky game state? Of course. But, like, you're relying on some very thin margins here. And when on the other side of the ball, you've got Mahomes, who is just so consistent, and his ability to convert on third downs is almost bankable. It just leaves the margin of error to be basically nothing for the Texans. And I really think this is a matchup that has them basically needing to just kind of pray, considering where their offense is at right now.
Yeah, the offensive line is a concern for me against this defense. It's a lot of moving parts. You've got guys playing in new positions. Tyus Howard's played left guard the last couple weeks. You got Juice Scruggs probably playing right guard. It looks like Shaq Mason's going to be out again. Blake Fisher stepping in the right tackle. And this is a Chiefs defense that's done an excellent job since Spagnuolo's been there of creating unblocked pressure. And that's something that the Texans offensive line has been probably the worst in the league at, is just picking up assignments and knowing where to block, both in the run game and the pass game. Seth, you have anything on that side of the ball?
Yeah, they're going to have to throw the ball quick, like if they're going to get as much man coverage as they did in the week 16 game, and they did have some success throwing slants and like quick outs and stuff like that, that's fine, and they might have somewhat similar success, especially to Collins, like Judah said, even on McDuffie. I think there's some, you could catch a slant or a quick out or something like that. It's just going to be the deeper stuff that is a little more concerning, especially without Tank Dell. And then again, like you said, you add in Jalen Watson, like going from, you know, we had Jalen Watson, I think somewhere in like the 50th ranked corner, which is like fine, whatever. I think he's probably might be better than that, but like fine, 50th ranked corner. But losing that and going to the 125th ranked corner, the 130th ranked corner, that's a big deal. If you get back Jalen Watson, who will match up, and honestly, like he can match up against Nico Collins, and that's probably okay too. It's just like you said, there's no one else. Like John Mechie is not producing the level that I was hoping for as a second round pick and Canadian. Xavier Hutchinson, not that player. Woods used to be that player, not that player anymore. Schultz, every once in a while, looks like a real player, but probably isn't. Like, so even if you're getting some Nico Collins, even if you're getting like a nice game from Nico Collins, is that enough from do you get enough from the other guys? And yeah, I agree with everything. The O-line's, it's not good enough to get into these long third downs. And like you said, they're also the reason they're in a lot of long third downs, because they can't pick up anyone in the run game either. They're allowing a lot of tackles for loss, and it's not very good. That's really the concern, is like, can someone else step up? Like you might hit like a Nico Collins over and they still lose the game by two touchdowns, right? because no one else can is doing anything in this game.
Yeah. Just to close out with some of the angles I like, I tend to side with the Chiefs, but we've also at the same time seen the Chiefs not win many games by multiple scores. So I'm probably just going to stay away on the spread at 8.5. I like Chiefs pass game overs. One guy we didn't really talk about much was Marquise Brown. They've kind of worked him in slowly. He only has 34 routes in the two games he's played, but he's been targeted 15 times on those 34 routes. So like, there's a non-zero possibility that with 2 weeks off, week 18, the wild card round, he has a larger role in this game. And if that's the case, I like looking at some of his alts in the Chiefs passing game tied with to Mahomes. And then, Judah, you mentioned Cade Stover. He's out. He broke his collarbone. He was a big part of their run game. He was a decent inline run blocking tight end. I think the Texans aren't going to try to run the ball a ton. This has been the best run defense that the Chiefs have had since Spagnuolo's been there. They're second in yards per carry allowed to running backs this year. I like Joe Mixon's rushing attempts under at I took it 15.5 at like -102. I think there's some 16.5s out there that are juiced up a little bit more. But I think they're going to be in a spot where they're not going to be able to stick with the run game when it's not very efficient. Any other angles either you like to close it out?
No, I would just again, I was going to shout out the Marquise Brown stuff. The same thing we said about the Texans last week is still true this week. That a team that forces a ton of throws deep, and Xavier Worthy, the same thing goes for him. I think it might be wise to bet on a Chiefs deep ball, and even the Mahomes alts are intriguing at current pricing as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I always like. I know I said he's not a great receiver, but I always like betting on Metchie when he's the wide receiver too, just because the volume of targets is possible there. But I also like Hollywood Brown. I think he's probably their best receiver right now. So I'll bet on their best receiver, who's at the line is like 39.5, 49.5, something like that. So I'll definitely do that.
Yeah, and on Metchie, the Chiefs have given up, I think it's the fourth most receiving yards to the slot, and that's where Metchie is a lot of the time. So in a pass-heavy script for the Texans, like, just betting on the volume makes some sense.
And I think maybe it might be like a I haven't looked at the number, but it might be a Metchie, like, catches over rather than yards if they start giving him some of the bubbles and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was one thing I remember, because I was on the Texans in that game. In the first half, they threw like four or five bubble screens, and they went for a loss like every single time. So you still get the receptions, but yards, not necessarily. We'll move on to the Saturday night game, Commanders at Lions. This spread's a little bit longer at 9.5. Detroit's favored, 55.5 point total. But I have more confidence in Washington keeping it close than I do Houston, and I think you're with me there, Judah.
Yeah, definitely there with you. I think there are a couple of kind of framings for this game that I'm using when thinking about this, but number one, it's just like, I think a good perspective to have relative to the prices, like how much it will take for CJ Stroud to go into Kansas City and win, or like even last week, like what would need to go right for Bo Nix and the Broncos to go into Buffalo and win, and like the path for Washington, I think, is a lot easier. And the other piece of this is, I think that a lot of kind of per play metrics fail to capture how good Washington's offense has been, because they're so aggressive on fourth down, like the Lions. The kind of ordinary relationship that a model builds in does not capture Washington. When you say on 3rd and 6, get 3 yards, that means something very different to the Washington offense, which has a like 87% conversion rate. I don't think that's necessarily sustainable on fourth down, but it's directionally accurate. It just means something different. And this is a Washington offense that on the drive level is fourth in series success rate. They are second in percentage of drives, which end in a touchdown. By any drive level metric, they've been awesome. And certainly they're worse than Detroit, but this is also a Detroit defense, which has been absolutely atrocious. And Sure, they got into a great game state with Minnesota in Week 18, and they performed okay. And then the game state itself reinforced how Detroit plays because they are such an aggressive man team. They you want to be playing in spots where you can rush the passer and you kind of benefit from that game state. I don't think that's necessarily true now. And I'd rather kind of pay attention to the sample of the previous 6 weeks where they were getting shredded by everyone. No team had a yards per attempt below league average. They were averaging, they were allowing like 9 yards per attempt. The EPA numbers were off the charts. This is a bad pass defense right now. And I think that this is a Washington team that is going to be able to move the ball. And like on the defensive side, Detroit's already so good on offense. It's already priced in. This is a team averaging like 3 points per drive. There's only so much you can go from there. Like things are going, you're going to make some mistakes. You're not going to be able to score 7 points per drive, obviously. But I think it's really just going to be a battle of like variance almost. And like who converts on the fourth downs, who doesn't. And obviously we should have some kind of advantage for Detroit as a better team, but there are clear pathways of just like Washington sustainably moving the ball. And going toe-to-toe. And the last thing I'll say on this is that, like, Washington's offense, and Jaden Daniels in particular, has a very different post-bye. Jaden Daniels' scramble rate is way higher. He's not the same injury. He's kind of not the same quarterback who's kind of protecting that rib injury. Not a doctor. You can tell from the style of play. And they've been a way more efficient offense when he's scrambling. And he's been doing that a lot more often. So all of those things certainly have me on 9.5. I think that number is way too high. But I also think there are definitely pathways for Washington to even be live to win this game.
Yeah, I've bet against the Washington defense multiple times because on paper, the Washington defense is bad. Like they've struggled to defend the run. They give up yards in the passing game. The issue with that is that every time I'm betting against Washington, there's these 8-9 minute drives from the Washington offense, and it just lowers. It lowers, and they're scoring, right? So they're able to kind of reverse the game script, especially when you're betting rushing against them. And it just kills the play volume for the other side. And it leads to more of these games. There's a reason why Washington, it seems, consistently finds themselves in these games that are decided by one possession late in the game where you're relying on Daniels to win in these high leverage situations, which he's done at a pretty high rate. But on the Lions defense, I'll kick it over to you, Seth. The last time we saw them, they looked excellent against Minnesota, right? They were able to generate pressure. They were able to disrupt the timing of that offense. Before that, it looked terrible for multiple weeks, right? San Francisco was able to do whatever they wanted against Detroit the week before in week 17. So what version of this Detroit defense are you expecting here in the spot against Washington?
I'll add just because you hit on something that we're going to make a petition for the betting outlets to add next year, which is like a yards per attempt over under, because I'd be a millionaire if I could just bet, like, knowing a team is going to dominate, but then not necessarily care about the play volume, which was the Bucks last week, right? You just talked about it. Washington last week had like over 9 plays per drive. On the season, they're averaging, I think, 6.3 plays per drive, which is the third highest. So you are in that potential issue there when we talk about the Lions offense and their numbers. But I think, we saw a very specific game plan against the Minnesota Vikings that I don't necessarily know if you're going to see again. Now, they might play well. I'm not saying that they're going to play worse or anything. It's just going to be a completely different game plan. You don't necessarily need to double Terry McLaurin like you double Justin Jefferson for a couple of reasons. And it really, like, less about the skill. Like, Terry McLaurin is a top receiver, but he lines up on the left side all the time, and Jaden Daniels only throws to the right, except for like the targets to Terry McLaurin. It's very weird, even though he has like 130 targets or something this season. He is generally a right thrower. So I don't know if they're going to see they're going to play a lot of man. They do play a lot of man, but it won't be as, one receiver heavy in terms of the game plan defensively. I like Jaden Daniels again. Well, I like these type of quarterbacks against a man heavy type of defense. So I like Jaden rushing overs. I think it's like 54.5. I like that over. They're a really good zone read team, or I should say zone read. They're a good read option team, let's call it. And that's not something the Lions have been particularly great against. They've been a good run defense team in general. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like about the Washington offense in terms of the matchup that Aaron Glenn and this defense has kind of had problems with and these type of quarterbacks.
Yeah, and well, moving over to the other side, like maybe play volume's a concern. We talked about that, but I'm not really concerned about the Lions being able to move the ball against this defense, and I don't think any of us are. There's a reason this total's 55.5. We're expecting points here. I think the one thing I'm interested in your guys' opinion on is it's really just guesswork. But the rushing split between David Montgomery, who's coming back this week, and Jahmyr Gibbs, I leaned towards, just with the play volume stuff, Gibbs' line was set 84.5 earlier in the week. It's since moved down, I believe. So I took the under 84.5, and Montgomery was set at 38.5 on FanDuel. Now it's 45.5. So it seems like they're trending towards Montgomery getting a little bit more work. Is there any read that either of you have on what that split's going to look like and whether you like Montgomery's overs, unders, Gibbs overs, unders in this spot?
Well, I mean, if it goes back to like the middle of the season numbers, which I think were mostly around, like they were both pretty close to each other in like the 50s in a lot of games, then I like give, obviously like Gibbs over 50, whatever, that's for sure. I'm kind of just waiting for that number to go down as Montgomery's number goes up. Because I rewatched like the last time that this offense played against a Dan Quinn defense. And obviously like Dan Quinn doesn't call the plays anymore. Joe Witt does, but they played them last year in Dallas. I think on a Monday night or a Monday night game, but I think it was on Saturday. It wasn't a great game for the Lions considering how good they are generally. And one of the things that I noticed was a lot of running plays that went for losses. About a third of their runs went for losses, which was a very high mark and like the third highest mark in any Lions game in the last 2 years. And a lot of that has to do with the talent that Dallas has on Dallas had on defense last year, especially on the D-line, which I don't think you have this year for Washington running a similar-ish system, same system, but calling some different plays. The coverage rates are different than they were in Dallas over the years. That's where I'm like, all right, well, if you're not getting the negative plays and you're still getting a lot of the explosive plays, which are going to happen, then I do like, you know, again, if Gibbs' number comes down a bit, then I do like Gibbs over. And I just look at this defense and I don't love the stuff that they can do to mitigate whatever the Lions want to do. If you're going to stay in too high, they're not good enough on the defensive line to deal with the double teams that the Lions are going to give you, and they're going to run the ball like crazy. If you play one high, they're not good enough at corner. Maybe they are. Maybe Marshon Lattimore has, you know, had enough weeks now in the system to like find himself, but he hasn't been good so far. Sanders still has been okay. Actually, the their best player might have been like their slot, Noah Igbinoghene. But that's where the issue is. Like, how do they get pressure? Well, they get pressure when they blitz Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu. Don't do that against the Lions. Like, don't send five-man rushes against the Lions because they're going to pick it up and then they're going to torch you over in the middle of the field. Like, I do agree that Washington can hang with them, but at the same time, like, I don't love a situation, which is very possible, that the Lions come out to a 14-point lead. And then it's scary. Then it's scary if to think about the Washington recovering.
Judah, what is there? Is there any angles you're attacking on Detroit, or are you mostly on Washington here?
I mean, I think that path to Detroit is certainly viable, and then it just kind of reinforces the defensive style, where it's like the Lions want to be aggressive because it plays to that game state. I just think, like, given where the market's pricing the difference of these teams, I think that's too much. I definitely have interest in a bunch of the Lions pass catchers. And even if we see it on a dart, I think Khalif Raymond is a great bet. He was obviously worked in week 18, now got an extra week. He's been dominating single coverage, which the Commanders run at one of the highest rates in the league. He leads the Lions in separation, PFF grade, yards per out run, targets per out run against single coverage. And they scheme him those looks, whereas the rest of the receivers have seen it far less than Khalif Raymond. So that's kind of a dart I want to play. Jameson Williams also, especially if Washington goes into the single high looks to stop the run. He's been great there. I'm an Austin Brown. I think that the markets are pricing him pretty well and also has the most difficult matchups. Not that he can't win those, but yes, there are certainly paths to the Lions scoring a whole bunch of points. But we also have a situation where the touches are far less concentrated with David Montgomery back. Because you're just going to see, and Khalif Raymond for that matter, you're going to see four to five wide receivers rotating, a bunch of running backs. They're going to get Sam Laporta involved as well. A lot of mouths to feed from a betting perspective and building out these parlays. But absolutely, I mean, it's hard. If you're Washington, you're banking basically on Detroit failing on their fourth downs or failing in the red zone. And, like, it's one thing to do that if you're a pickup game. It's another thing as a 9-point underdog. Like, that's fine to do because you want to be on that side of variance. But not too much. I think the main play for me from betting side is going to be Khalif Raymond. And then, obviously, the Washington side of things as well.
Yeah. No, Jameson Williams blow-up week is always something I'm interested in, and I think this is a spot where you could get it. Against single high, he's been great this year. Seth also sent me some numbers on Washington against crossing routes. They've really struggled, and that's obviously something that Jameson Williams does well. One last note, I'm on the Commanders plus 9.5 too, with a little bit on the money line, just because I think the value's good. Last note on Washington before we move on, and then I'll kick it to Seth for closing thoughts. Deami Brown has been a bigger part of this offense the last couple weeks. He actually leads Washington in yards per out run against man coverage. Had a big game in the wild card round against Tampa Bay. His line's 31.5. So, like, I like taking some stabs at the over there.
I like some sort of non-running back rushing over. I don't know if it's going to be Jameson. Like, right now, the only line I have on Bet365 is Jameson over 1.5 rushing yards. But I don't know if it's going to be Jameson or Khalif Raymond or Amon-Ra St. Brown. I like someone there. I don't know who, but I like someone there. If I only have the only line I have is Jameson, I might just do it. But it's one of those guys is going to get a carry in this game. I guarantee you that.
You also get the chance of a backwards pass to Jameson Williams where he's supposed to throw it, and they just scrambles. This is
live. There you go.
So maybe that'll come through. First game on Sunday is the Rams at the Eagles. Eagles are 6.5-point favorites, 44.5-point total. These two teams played earlier in the season as well. This was the game that Saquon had 255 rushing yards on the back of 270-yard rushing touchdowns. I don't know if you can bet on that, but even if you take out those 270-yard rushing touchdowns, he still had over 100 yards in this game. And his line's like 111.5. But obviously the Eagles want to run the ball. This is a Rams defense that played really well against Minnesota. I think the big differentiator between Minnesota and Philadelphia in this spot is the offensive line for Philadelphia, especially without Darisaw in Minnesota. Much better. Like, those edge rushers should not have the same kind of success just bull rushing the tackles into the pocket and collapsing the pocket like they did against the Vikings. And this is a Rams secondary that's been a little bit vulnerable for a lot of the season, especially to outside receivers. They've given up some explosives. It doesn't feel comfortable just because the Eagles want to run the ball. I have a little bit of interest in Hurts and Brown in the passing game in this spot. What are you on here, Judah?
I'm not loving the Eagles passing game here. Number one, I don't think Jalen Hurts is fully healthy. We talked about that last week. Then anecdotally speaking, I was actually at that game. Did not seem fine. That's not what I'm using to bet on. But Jalen Hurts is on basically all of his passing production against man coverage. He's like 96th percentile in EPA against man. He falls well below average against zone. And I think what's interesting about you bring up the matchup last week, like the Rams were not winning quick. Like Sam Darnold was being sacked almost exclusively after like 3 seconds, which is like points to the quarterback. And like that's Jalen Hurts' problem too. And like he invites more pressure than any quarterback not named Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson. I just like he's a guy who holds on to the ball for far too long. And yes, the Rams, I find them as kind of a neutral matchup. And like I don't think this is a pass rush which has been dominant, and I don't think they were so dominant in wild card week. I think it was a function of Sam Darnold, but it just I think that the way the Eagles want to play is naturally fragile, in much the same way the Vikings were last week. Of like you really need a positive game state because you want to be able to rely on the ground game. You don't want Jalen Hurts in these straight dropbacks, especially because of how many sacks he's taken in the few obvious passing situations they've had. He's got like the third highest sack rate in the NFL. And along with a lot of his efficiency metrics that follow in him struggling. So look, we haven't seen the Eagles fall behind much. They've like run the second fewest plays while trailing, but it's a different beast come playoff time. And I think that on the passing side of things, they need that positive game state in order to have success. And if they're in that positive game state, I think they run the ball a lot. So you're basically just betting on deep balls, which they haven't been throwing. And what was interesting to me is that Jalen Hurts is still running, or he ran as much as he did. He's just sliding way earlier. He's not bracing for contact. He's clearly not running in the same way, which is another element that you've got to take away from this offense. But yeah, from a kind of player's perspective, I think you can still bet on Barkley having a huge game, and they are going to feed him a lot. Although I think that the market numbers pretty much capture where he's at, and I don't know if there's value there. But the point I guess I would reinforce, just like at this game as a whole and why I would lean towards the Rams if I had to choose a side here, is just like there's a lot of fragility in how the Eagles want to play. Their defense looks a lot better. The defense has been great, no doubt. But the defense looks a lot better because they find themselves in such positive situations. And like teams have been in the highest expected pass situations against the Eagles. Like you're going to have more success defensively when you're in those spots. So a lot of the base numbers are just built into a prior of kind of the game states that the Eagles have had. And I'm not sold, especially given the state of the Eagles offense right now, that they'll be so easy to kind of jump ahead in this spot.
Yeah. The Rams offense, if we move over to that side, they came out against the Vikings and just passed the ball early. 81% pass rate in the first half in that game. That was the highest of any team on wildcard weekend. If you look at the regular season, they had a 57 first half pass rate, which is fourth lowest in the NFL. So my concern with the Rams offense is the Eagles play with light boxes at the highest rate in the league. It was the Vikings felt like a game plan specific thing that honestly, Judah, you clocked. I probably should have clocked going into wildcard weekend. They just came out and passed and had success, and Stafford was able to beat the blitz, and they were able to find guys downfield, especially Tyler Higbee early in that game. Like my worry with the Rams offense is they come into this game, the Eagles are in light boxes, they're in too high, and it's like we're gonna try to run the ball. And like even though the Eagles are playing these light boxes and they're playing too high, they've been an elite run defense for much of the year because their guys up front, specifically on the interior, their linebackers, are winning. So if that's what the Rams do, like I'm concerned about them getting out to a slow start before they start to go more pass heavy, which, by the way, passing against the Eagles also been very difficult. Seth, do you think they can come out and have some success through the air early and kind of go a little bit more pass heavy early in this game against Philly?
I don't. And that, like you said, is a concerning thing because, you know, you looked at last week and first quarter is great. Every other quarter is pretty bad. Like they didn't really do anything. Now, did they have to do anything? Maybe not, but they didn't do anything. And first play, the Nakua, I think it's like a 30-yard pass on the first play of the game.
Which, by the way, we were both on Nakua. Judah, you were probably on Nakua too. It started out as good as it could buy. It was like a 28-yard catch on the first play. And I'm like, he's going to go for 130 yards in this game. And nothing.
Afterwards. But you get like a six-man rush, a blitz, that gets picked up easily. And then Nakua is in so much space. And it's like that. Those are the things like that Stafford has been good at playing against. And I know that's why, Judah, you were on Stafford last week. Those are not the things that the Eagles are going to do, right? They're not going to blitz. They're not going to come out of too high. And a very different too high. Like we sometimes add in cover zero to too high because I guess technically it is like an open, middle of the field open coverage. But like, those are not the stuff that the Eagles are going to do. They're going to start in too high. They're going to spin a safety late. So I don't love, and just in general, this has not been a great passing offense, especially over the back half of the season, save for some like spurts from Stafford. And you can argue that first quarter on Monday night was a spurt from Stafford, you know, the Bills game. But really it hasn't been that great. And it's not that the outlook, I think, going forward is not great for Stafford just statistically, but that's a whole different story. So I look at it like if they're going to run the ball a lot, which I think they will try again, you're hoping that the N'Kobe Dean injury is a big deal. Going from N'Kobe Dean to Oren Burks, I think, can be a big deal. I think if they're going to maybe not, like, if Vic Fangio is going to say, okay, I don't want to play Oren Burks as my lone linebacker when I bring Zach Bond as an edge rusher and I play in these like odd five-man fronts, then that changes the game plan. Then it's like, okay, well, maybe we can get these double teams going, which is what they want to do, which is what the Rams want to do. Double team, get the ball going downhill on the duo runs. Maybe you can get some success that way. So that then N'Kobe Dean is potentially a big deal. But it scares me. I don't love a lot of these matchups on the Rams offense. If you're getting the median Stafford game this season, which just hasn't been that good.
Yeah. One thing I do have a lot of interest in, maybe my favorite bet from this game, Stafford under 34.5-yard longest completion. Just because the Eagles have allowed the fourth fewest 35-plus yard completions this year. Like, I don't think the Rams receivers are going to be able to win downfield, and I think they're going to try to kind of win underneath. And that's – if you're looking at Philly, like, there's not easy to find an area where they're in the bottom half of the league in anything. They're in the bottom half of the league in receptions allowed to slot receivers. So I was kind of debating – Cooper Kupp over 4.5 receptions at plus money, which feels it feels terrible. Cooper Kupp's done nothing for like 5 straight weeks. Going back to that Bills game, I think was the last big game he had. He's had like less than 30 yards. He had the big catch last week against the Vikings, but that's the only catch he had. But in the first Eagles game, he had 9 targets and had a decent game. So like, if they're going pass heavy, maybe some interest there, but in general, I'm not interested in this Rams offense against Philadelphia. Honestly, not a ton I love from this game. I think I understand that Philly wants to run the ball and the Rams play zone, but AJ Brown had over 100 yards even when they were playing with a lead in the first game against the Rams. Like, I like his matchups on the outside. Generally, they're bottom 5 in coverage grade. Outside the numbers, bottom or to outside receivers, bottom 5 in coverage grade on deep throws outside the numbers. Like, that's basically what you're betting on if you're betting that angle, is Hurts connecting with Brown on some of these explosive plays. But in general,
I think one of the differences between what you saw last week. So when I looked at, like, last week, we looked at this game, this Rams Vikings game, and we were like, well, it's not possible that the Vikings don't throw the ball a lot into the space that the Rams have always given teams this season, in that intermediate, which is what happened in the Week 8 game again on Thursday night. They threw it into the space in 10 to 19 yards over the middle of the field. Like, that's just going to happen again. And so the Rams said, no, we're not going to give you that space. We're going to play closer to what the Lions did to you guys and play more man coverage. and then double Jefferson and play with guys over the middle of the field and like, you know, robber rats, whatever you want to call them. I get concerned that like they had no choice but to do that. But now it's like, okay, well, what's the follow up against an even better offense and an offense that you, like Ben said, you can't dominate in the trenches. That is the concern. And I think when I looked at that Vikings game plan, you didn't see a lot of, okay, we're going to put Jefferson wide and just throw him some balls here because he's going to win these matchups against the below average Rams cornerbacks. That is exactly what Philly is going to do. And especially in that first game in week 12, Sunday night, you only had Jalen Hurts in that game. You only had A.J. Brown in that game. So it was one of those games where they moved A.J. Brown more around, ran him on different types of routes, still had a great game, obviously. I don't think with Devontae Smith back, I think you're going to see more of the more static A.J. Brown, which is fine because it means he's going to be wide. He's going to play one-on-one. They'll always win those. He always wins those matchups. He just does. He just always wins them. So I think there's a bit of a different game plan for the Eagles than the Vikings showed. And I just wonder if kind of like, I don't know, they blew their load too early, the Rams on kind of how they're going to play in the playoffs. Cause it's just tougher to do that against what the Eagles present schematically.
And we know AJ Brown's mind's going to be right. Reading Inner Excellence. he changed that author's life. With that, we'll move on to the game of the week, the game everyone's been waiting for weeks. The two front runners in the MVP race in Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. Baltimore's going to Buffalo as 1.5 point favorites. Not that these points really mean much, but I think the Bills opened as 1.5 point favorites and it has since flipped to Baltimore as slight favorites. 51.5 point total. This is another game we saw early in the season. Week 4, these two teams played on Sunday night, and the Ravens absolutely rolled Buffalo, 35-10. Derrick Henry had an 89-yard touchdown run early in the first quarter. Didn't really look back. He finished with almost 200 rushing yards in that game. The Ravens dominated. The Bills weren't able to get much going on offense. In my opinion, I think the Ravens are going to have success offensively no matter what this game script is, but it's different based on kind of how this game starts. They have really big splits in terms of run rate when they're leading versus when they're tied or trailing. I've talked about that a few times. When they're leading, 59% run rate, highest in the NFL. When they're tied or trailing, 39%, which is still top 10, but it's ninth in the NFL, 20% difference. So I kind of like building SGPs in this game multiple ways for the Ravens offense. You can tie Buffalo first half to like a Lamar-centric game plan. You can tie Ravens first half to a Derrick Henry kind of dominates on the ground against a defense that is schematically set up to not really stop the run. They play light boxes. They play too high. They're in nickel all the time. Like schematically, this is not an off a matchup that benefits them with how the Ravens get heavy and kind of the Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry two-man game that has really been firing late in the season. On the same hand, the Bills' pass defense has struggled. And like last week, it didn't really matter against Denver because they controlled time of possession so much. They were able to run the ball all over Denver, which I wasn't really expecting. But against Baltimore, like I think if they have to pass, you could get a big Lamar Jackson passing game here. How are you seeing this game, Judah?
Yeah, I think this is like that was a perfect framing of like the medians of this game and like what's most likely to happen. I think converges on like a 50-50 pickup, but there are so many different ways and different path dependencies which this game can go, which makes it like very attractive on the same game part of the market. The part that concerns me on the Ravens side, I mean, the Bills past events, to your point, has been terrible. And even the Broncos on Sunday just dropped so many passes, which I think could have made things a lot worse. But this is a Ravens team that also really lacks weapons right now. I mean, like, I don't think Zay Flowers is going to go. Rashad Bateman's been fine, but they still have problems here. And if they're going to be forced into some, like, key third downs where if you're down in a game, let's say, like, that injury is going to matter a lot. With that said, like, this is also an offense that has been with right up there with the Lions. It's the best in the NFL. And it's, they're so difficult to defend because they can beat you in so many ways, right? It's not just with Derrick Henry. Now, even Lamar Jackson's been running a lot more. And then, obviously, the way those two interact, I'm just going to elevate each side of things in addition to Lamar Jackson being dominant as a passer. And, like, there's little reason to think outside of, like, a bunch of randomness can happen and you can fall into a negative game state that the Ravens won't succeed. And on the flip side, like, I think this is a Raven, at least when accounting for how the market's pricing these things, this is a Ravens pass defense that I think is way overrated. This idea of, like, oh, they moved Kyle Hamilton back to deep safety, all of a sudden they're the number one defense in the NFL. Like, there are a ton of confounding factors here, namely the quarterbacks they faced in between. And, like, you throw it all out the window against Josh Allen as, like, the guy who is the player, at least at this point, who can extend plays and create. Like, that is where he's been so dominant. And if you want to talk about the tendencies, where Baltimore's been much more man-heavy, single high, like, Allen's been dominant against these coverages. And not to mention the Bills are the healthiest they've been in a while at receiver. So I think there are so many different pathways for the Bills to succeed too. And I'm not really buying this Ravens resurgence. I mean, Russell Wilson was cooking them on those deep balls, and it could have been a lot worse if George Pickens did not get called for an OPI there that I think usually does not get called. They just kind of, like, fully extended the arm, which is all to say that, like, I think the Bills are going to be able to move the ball, but it's a question of, at least to me, it's a question of Josh Allen's going to be dropping back to pass a lot. The Ravens have one of the best run defenses in the NFL. I definitely see some value on Allen's passing over. I got it at 235, still hanging out around that range just because the Bills have been very variant in their run pass rates. And this is a spot to me that is a clear pass or drop back situation. But, like, it's also unclear whether those dropbacks turn into like a crazy passing volume day or Josh Allen's running the ball 10, 12 times scrambling. But I do think it lends itself to a drop back scenario. It really, to me, depends on the game states and, like, who jumps out to a lead. Are they playing in neutral settings? And I think going mano a mano, should also absolutely mention the weather. It's going to be freezing cold in Buffalo. Also should probably mention the weather last in that Eagles-Rams game. Like, it's not fun as analysts to kind of account for this sort of thing because we're dealing with small samples in addition to just, like, general uncertainty of how these games are good. But, like, the weather's going to matter. You're not going to play the same. So I think it's really a question of, like, how do the Ravens attack? That's kind of the most uncertain thing to me. And where I think I have the most certainty relative to what's being priced in is that the Bills are going to pass a lot. Or drop back to pass a lot, I think I should say. Which has me on some of the Allen stuff. And I think they'll have success. Considering certainly the season Allen's had and even just his traits and how that can mitigate whatever the Ravens are going to throw at him. And certainly when accounting for the tendencies of the Ravens, it does play into exactly what Allen does exceptionally well.
Yeah, I thought the same thing last week, to be fair. The Bills were going to drop back to pass against the Broncos because the Broncos were going to stop the run. And that absolutely did not happen. Now, this is a different situation because the Ravens' offense is a different beast, right? So there's a better chance that they're pushing the Bills to at least be in neutral game scripts. And, like, So I tend to side with you on Allen. And the Ravens have been a super big single high team since towards the end of the season. They're top five in single high rate at the end of the year. That gives me a little bit of interest in Keon Coleman. His receiving line is 22.5 yards. Like, it's basically him and Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper I just can't bet on just because I don't really know. He's not playing as many snaps as Keon Coleman. He had the thing where he left for a personal matter a couple weeks ago during practice. So, like, he's just not been a big part of the offense. And I have faith in Keon Coleman's ability to win, like, potentially one of those downfield routes against the Ravens, and he goes over 22.5 yards. Seth, how are you seeing this game?
No, I'm on the same thing. I wasn't sure. I might do both, like, Cooper and Coleman, because, you know, when you go back – well, first of all, my first thing is I guarantee you My guarantee of the week is that the Bills will score more than 10 points this week. And I looked at what they did in week four, week three, whatever it was. They wanted to play very horizontal. and it just didn't work. I mean, I don't know what to say. It just didn't work. Very horizontal. Not a lot of deep shots until later in the game. Then they do hit Coleman late down the sideline, and maybe a cut one at a time. You have that information already where it's like, hey, like Marlon Humphrey versus Khalil Shakir in the slot, maybe not a good matchup for us as a Bills offense. However, if we can spread them out a bit more and go back to kind of like old Bills offense where they're going to spread everyone out and create these matchups one-on-one, well, we can get Brandon Stevens and Nate Wiggins on a matchup that we do like down the field. And I think that's exactly what's going to end up happening. Will we see the 6 O-line and will we see some James Cook rushing? Yeah, for sure. But I think overall, I'd like to think that they've learned their lesson and they're going to go a little bit more vertical this week because they can. I think the weather thing is important in that this is all pseudoscience here, but like the wind probably is the more important. I like Josh Allen versus the wind probably a little more than I like Lamar Jackson versus the wind, especially in that, like, yeah, that's my little pseudoscience there for the week. But
it's also Derrick Henry football weather. Cold it weather, is. Just run through people. You're gonna hear over under on the amount of times you hear that from the broadcast booth on Sunday night. It's 4.5.
I think how many times are we gonna get that with Josh Allen?
Yeah.
I feel like it's a real battle. Each team's got their body bar.
Yeah, you get a head to head line on those two and cold weather mentions.
Yeah. So I'll just say I don't love Khalil Shakir, but I do love some other guys. I mean, Amari Cooper's 22.5. Keon Coleman, I have 24.5. Like, I like both of them. And I just think they're gonna put the ball in Josh's hands. Like, this is the time to put the ball in Josh's hands and not have what happened to them in week 4, which is like you run the ball, you're throwing bubble screens, you're throwing spot routes and shit. Like, what? We're gonna get the ball down the field and we're gonna do what the Bills do.
One note on the Ravens offense that I didn't hit. Javonte Williams let me down last week, but I'm going back to it. I'm betting Justice Hill over 20.5 receiving yards in this spot. He had a big game the first time against Buffalo, 6 catches for 78 yards and a touchdown. Like, it's especially if Zay Flowers is out and you're kind of reducing the number of viable receivers you have against a defense that has allowed more receiving yards to running backs than any other defense in the NFL. Have some interest there. But like I said, like, I have some interest in the Buffalo passing offense. The Ravens, I've built 2 SGPs around kind of both game scripts. Heavy Derrick Henry rushing, then Lamar Jackson passing. And I think they can win both ways. It's just a matter of how the game plays out. Any closing thoughts from either of you on this one?
Nothing really on the betting side. I just got to say, I mean, I feel like as exciting a matchup as we're going to get. At least in terms of just like how this game can play out and the general storylines. Super, super excited and grab those SGPs. Get creative here. I think that's kind of my pathway.
I like the if I could bet on like block wins and losses, I would bet on the Ravens offensive line winning a lot of blocks versus the Bills defensive line. And so I guess that means it potentially means Derrick Henry rushing, even though it's obviously a high number. I like Bateman, but I always like Bateman. So I just think there's this room over the, like, they talked about it last week, a game ago, but there's room over the middle of the field against the too high. They don't want to get burned deep. They don't allow a lot of deep targets, except the linebackers are going to get sucked in underneath and you're going to have these windows over the middle of the field for Bateman to run into as the priority receiver now, right? So now it's like Bateman's not going to run off the defense and then Zay is going to run the priority route, you know, in that chunk yardage range. It's going to be Bateman, I would assume. So I like Bateman.
Yeah, and if Zay plays, I have some interest in Zay. For similar reasons. The reports seem to indicate that, like, even if he doesn't practice all week, there's still a chance he plays, and it's kind of that deal with his injury. So keep your eye out for that. The last thing I'll end with, I was ready to bet James Cook rushing under just based off last week. He went off in a bad matchup. I think this is one of the worst matchups in the league for rushing. His line set at 55.5 yards, so I will not be betting that under. That is very reasonable, and I probably lean over. Not that I'm going to bet it, but the thing with the Bills rushing offense that we didn't really hit on, Ray Davis is in concussion protocol, so chance he doesn't play. Also, Seth, you mentioned the 6-0 line stuff. Alec Anderson's been limited in practice with a calf injury. He's been their sixth offensive lineman who they use that more than any other offense in the league. So if he misses, that's a hit to their running game as well. But I'm with you. It's we're waiting all week for Sunday night. This is it's not quite the same late slot. I think it's like 6:30 p.m. Eastern. But this is definitely the game of the week.
Can I bet like over under on the amount of six? If Alec Anderson plays, I want like a game bet of over under six offensive line, because I think this might be the most six offensive line jumbo formation or jumbo personnel grouping combined in one game that we've ever seen. Well, at least since like the 70s or whatever.
It sounds like we need to open a sports book with all these niche markets.
We need the Seth sports book.
Yeah.
These are some great markets.
Dude, I would, if I could bet like Baker Mayfield, for some reason it's always Baker Mayfield. If I could have bet like Baker Mayfield over yards per attempt on a few games where they dominated and then didn't get the play volume, I wouldn't be here right now. I would have quit my job already.
Yeah, no, I specifically remember you mentioning it the one week the Packers played the Bears, and Jordan Love averaged 15 yards per attempt in that game, but he only passed like less than 20 times. So
yeah,
Seth's are sharp on yards per attempt bets that don't exist. That's all we got for this week. Hopefully, at least for me and Seth, we can catch up to Judah a little bit with this week after a tough wild card round. And hopefully
it's been a tough every week of the season for me. So.
Back month of the season has been brutal. But there's always next week, and this week's a good one. So place those bets and win some money. We'll talk to you next week for the championship round.